Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to year number two in the bunker.
We have completed one full year of this particular podcast, the PIDcast, and we thank you for being with us through the year. We welcome all new listeners. We know that, judging by our server statistics, that the last couple of months we've seen a real growth in the number of people subscribing to the podcast. So we're glad that you're here. We appreciate it. We do feel very often as though this is a large extended family.
Yeah.
And well, because we're just a little odd.
Yeah. And in that, and since we are an odd extended family, this week we are asking everybody to bring a covered dish.
Casseroles, you know, green beans with the little onion sprinkly things on the top. You know, the stuff that you get
good.
The Berkey things.
I like
things,
the broccoli casseroles.
Yeah.
I like those a lot.
Yeah.
And
so that'll be good.
Krispy Kreme.
Mm-hmm. And Krispy Kremes. Fried chicken is good. I always like that.
Yeah.
And all dogs are welcome. And we'll make space here in the bunker for you.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, it's really kind of humbling when we look at these server statistics each week and we look at how we've had to juggle things a little bit in terms of the way we encode the program so as to make it still audible, you know, legible, and yet not break the bank as far as the bandwidth goes. But
yeah.
Thankfully,
by the way, everybody, we've had some wonderful contributions to the bandwidth.
Yes, and that
problem,
is very humbling.
And we are so grateful for it. We can't even tell you what it means to us.
And that combined with our host company finally waking up to competition and expanding our limits has helped quite a bit too. So
yeah, I remember those first few months when we were looking at bandwidth and thinking, you know what? We'll never use all this bandwidth. Boy, you know, it's nice that they're offering us, you know, what was it, 100 gigs?
We had 100 gigs when we first started.
At that
right.
time, I thought, boy, that is just, we'll never use that.
Right. And then long about October, we checked the server stats about a week into October and went,
yeah.
And it was going a lot faster
than we
thought.
Actually, I think it was before that, but definitely October is when we had to make the switch.
Right. So, that's when
which lasted about a week.
Yeah. Tried going with another company that offered lots and lots of bandwidth for a small, small price.
There's no freelunch.com is the company that we chose.
That's exactly right. So, in any case, we thank you for being with us. We appreciate your suggestions, comments, and we hope that we can provide a useful source, be a useful source of information for you. We know that we have kind of an odd way of looking at the world that is unique, let's put it that way. But
you know
what?
Our listeners look at it very uniquely as well.
And that's exactly
so cool.
And that's exactly why we see this as a family of sorts. Because, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and appreciating it, that there aren't a whole lot of us out there that see the way we do. And that's why we started doing the podcast. That's why we write the books the way we write them, you know, the novels. It's our own PSYOPs campaign, actually, is what it is.
We sigh a lot.
As we look at the news, it's like, don't people get it? But we're glad that you do. And without any further ado, again, thank you for making this a fun year. The feedback that we get is so energizing.
It really is energizing.
And really rewarding.
Before we go on to the news, though, I do want to say that we did speak with Barry Chavish over the weekend.
Right.
And he is still recovering from the stroke that he suffered, and he tired pretty easily. So we went easy on him. We didn't push him past 20 minutes. So we will have that interview up tomorrow. And Wednesday, Thursday, and, of course, Friday, you'll get more blather.
That's right.
In honor of our one-year year anniversary. So I'm not joking about those covered casseroles. Bring those along to the bunker and we'll all, chips are nice too. So if your last name starts
A through M,
you have to bring a casserole. If it's the other end of the alphabet, you have to bring a dessert.
Yes. And let's see here. We had a line there that just kind of slipped away out of my head. We didn't get as much sleep last night as we would have liked. Java's still learning to sleep through the night, so it's
or not sleep through the night.
Yeah,
exactly. I fortunately, well, praise God, not fortunately, but praise God, the Lord has taught me over the last year or so that I need to get to bed early, and that has worked well with Java because I do go to bed early. I go to bed at about 9 o'clock, so when she wakes up at 3. It's not quite as shocking as it could be if I'd gone to bed at midnight.
Yeah, yeah. And our daughter's with us this week, and of course, she's not had to deal with this experience yet. So when she got out of bed this morning for school,
That look on her face morning—that was priceless.
It was, and amazing the way she navigated the hall and the kitchen without even opening her eyes.
I know.
Well, in the news. This is a story, actually an outgrowth of a story that you picked up on several months ago, and I think this is just says an awful lot about the nature of the so-called war on terror. And I say so-called because I am rapidly coming to conclude that it is 99.44% bogus.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, while I do believe that there are people in the world who would seek to do Americans harm and who hold certain beliefs that vindicate for them the harming of others who don't share those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming more and more clear by the contradictory actions of the current administration and previous administrations that this is being used as an excuse to get us to accept limitations on our freedom. And I'm talking about a story that came out today, or well, over the weekend, about the way the Department of Homeland Security itself is protected against terrorists.
It is a sitcom. It really does seem like the plot of a situation comedy. But it is not a comedy. It's a comedy of errors, if anything. You know, here's all this brouhaha about the Ports deal.
Right.
And when, in fact, we have people who are not properly trained or properly equipped that are supposed to be guarding very sensitive buildings and installations, bases in the United States, one of which is Homeland Security.
The Department of Homeland Security is ostensibly responsible for protecting us, not only from outside threats, but also for coordinating responses to natural disasters, such as hurricanes, earthquakes, volcanoes, and the like. Now, you may remember some months ago, we told you about a press conference that was to have been held after Hurricane Katrina at the Department of Homeland Security, a briefing. Reporters from the Washington Press Corps showed up at DHS headquarters and were informed by the guards outside the building that they were not allowed in.
Yeah, they were too late.
They needed to be there at least half an hour in advance. Now, these guys had just been at a press conference at the White House and didn't even know that Homeland Security was having this conference.
Right.
They were informed at the White House, you've got a press conference in 45 minutes or something of that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So they show up at Homeland Security. The guards outside say you can't get in. Now, here's the point that needs to be remembered. These guards are not National Guardsmen. They are not United States Army or United States Marine Corps. They're not even Washington, D.C. police officers. These are private security guards from the firm of Wackenhut Corporation. Now, remember Wackenhut, that name, because it is a name that keeps popping up in places all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear facilities, Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, power plants, and the Department of Homeland Security. Now, the reporters complained. Someone inside at Department of Homeland Security sent a message down to the guard station, said, let in the reporters. The Wackenhut guards, the private security firm, said, no. They overruled the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we thought that was kind of ridiculous. That was ridiculous. But comes this weekend word that the Wackenhut guards are now coming forward and saying, you know what, we are not properly instructed in what to do in the event of an emergency.
You know, this story is just coming out regarding that, but it's been there for a while. These guards, the ones who leave,
mm-hmm.
or the ones who are brave enough while still working there to really complain about it, they are not properly outfitted. They don't have proper weapons. Mm-hmm. They don't have proper uniforms. They don't have proper training.
Right.
And in fact, if you go online, you can find there are places where you find advertisements. Would you like a nice job?
Mm-hmm. And these guys are paid fairly well for security guards, anywhere from $15 to $23 an hour, depending on experience. Mm-hmm. But here is a classic example of what we're talking about. And this is reported by the Associated Press. The AP reports a story told by a guard named Derek Daniels. He said that an envelope with suspicious powder inside was delivered to the offices of the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that's happened several times in Washington, D.C. since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
We had the anthrax letters that were mailed in October of 2001. So when suspicious powder shows up at an office in Washington, D.C., you would think they'd have a procedure for that by now.
Well, in fact, there was a suspicious white powder that showed up in Atlanta today.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
They were shutting down everything.
And it should be, because you don't know what it could be.
Right.
Well, what these guys did, what Mr. Daniels reported, was that these guards at DHS watched in amazement, and I'm going to quote the article now, watched in amazement as superiors carried it by the office of Secretary Michael Chertoff, took it outside, and then shook it outside Chertoff's window without evacuating people nearby, end quote. In other words, they took the envelope, went outside, ripped open the envelope, and just flapped it in the wind to disperse the powder.
It's wrong on so many levels.
It's unbelievable. Now, they said, oh, well, we irradiate the incoming mail, so there was no danger of it being anthrax. Well, what if it was something other than anthrax?
Exactly. It's evidence, folks.
And what is evidence?
The first thing you do is bag it and tag it.
Exactly. No, the superiors, the supervisors for Wackenhut took it outside and just shook the powder free in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the powder, they said, proved to be harmless. Presumably, there was still enough stuck to the inside of the envelope for them to test it. But this is one example mm-hmm. of what they're talking about. And this is the level of security that is guarding the department of the United States government that is responsible for protecting all of us against outside threats. And this is why we're convinced that this threat is being used mostly to frighten us.
It could be that. It could also be, let's see, how can we best let the terrorists in?
That's very possible, too.
Leave the door unlocked.
Well, when we look at the southern border and how unprotected the southern border is with Mexico, that makes a lot of sense. It's the only thing that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't make any sense for the government to tell us that we need to be vigilant and constantly on the alert against, you know,
the Wackenhut guards.
You know, you go to fly at an airport, you got to stand in a long line. They got to, you know, pat you down. You know, if you're a woman, you run the risk of being fondled by a screener. They take away your inch long,
your little keychain knife
that they took away from me here, and that still bothers me. And yet, thousands of people are crossing the southern border every month. And many of them, according to the Border Patrol people, are OTMs, other than Mexicans. So it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all unless, as you say, they're deliberately messing this up to let people in.
Yeah. It really smacks of something. And I cannot imagine that these guards would be able to get away with the things that they are doing unless their superiors.
Mm-hmm.
Allow it. And the superiors, you would think somewhere up the chain, you have to get to somebody who really does know what he or she is doing.
Sure.
And the other question is, you know that these people have a nice, that Wackenhut has a nice fat
right.
contract. If these people are underpaid, not necessarily underpaid, but definitely undertrained
mm-hmm.
and poorly equipped,
right.
where's the money going?
Yeah. And the guys who set up Wackenhut are former military, former intelligence, former law enforcement. These are guys who knew what they were doing, and they've got connections in order to get the contracts for these security, to get these security contracts mm-hmm. for government installations. But the guards are saying they don't have any training in how to deal with weapons of mass destruction. They've replaced chemical sniffing dogs that are very effective at detecting explosives with screening machines that don't work very well, not as well as dogs anyway. Entrances and exits to the Department of Homeland Security offices are poorly guarded. And the guards who work those premises either have no radios at all to communicate, or the radios that they do have work poorly, and they can't communicate with each one another very well. And again, the only thing that makes sense is that it's done deliberately, because surely with all the money that's been allocated, they could set up an effective security force around the building.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Well, let's transition from that to port security, as long as we're talking about security.
Yes.
There was an interesting article that was published in the Village Voice a couple of weeks ago. Kind of slipped under the radar at the time, but it's appropriate because it relates to how secure the port at Dubai actually is. The author of the article, James Ridgway, kind of outlined the career, what's known anyway, of a shadowy Russian arms dealer named Victor Bout, B-O-U-T. And Victor is apparently a guy who runs a pretty far-reaching empire that deals with dope and guns. And a lot of it runs into and out of Afghanistan and other points in the Middle East. And the main point of transfer for all of these weapons and the narcotics that is being shipped back and forth is the port at Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. These are the guys we're going to put in charge of controlling the operations at 21 of our ports if things go through. So we will put a link to that article because it's worth reading just to find out a little bit more about what is going on here. But, you know, anyone who's watched the movie On the Waterfront knows that there's always been trouble keeping things under control at the ports. Port security during World War II was basically a joint venture of the U.S. Navy and the Mafia, because they used Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky to ensure that the longshoremen didn't join this other union and go on strike while we were trying to ship weapons and material to England to get ready to invade Germany. So they cut a deal with Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky. Look, we'll look the other way when you guys bring in the stuff you want to bring in, as long as you keep the longshoremen on the job. So port security is always a compromise.
I'm going to sleep better tonight. How about you? Oh, gosh. Hey, did you see the story, honey? AC-130s are heading back to Iraq. Now, isn't that great?
That is interesting.
It's a sledgehammer. It's sending in the big gun, so to speak.
Well,
it's not a delicate operation.
No.
Not a surgical strike when you send in an AC-130.
Yeah, if you were to, like, draw out a chart and, like, a scale on one side, precision munitions like the smart bomb on one end of the chart, and then on the other end you were looking for the most brutal blunt force instrument you could find, at least from an aerial weapon, that'd be the AC-130.
That's right.
Yeah, they call it the Spooky. It's a flying gunship. The left side of the plane basically is a cannon that normally gets mounted on a tank. Mm-hmm. And then one of those Vulcan miniguns that fires off, what, a couple thousand rounds a minute?
Depleted uranium?
I do believe that they use depleted uranium, at least in the shells in that 105-millimeter cannon.
Well, I was thinking about the big order that was just recently placed.
The $38 million order for tank. Well, those are tank shells, tank-busting shells.
Yeah.
But I think they're normally used by the armored divisions.
Okay.
It's possible, though, and I'm no expert on the military, so it's possible that the cannons that are in the AC-130s might be using them. But the point is that these things are basically designed to fly in a circle, you know, with the left side always pointed inward, you know, toward the target, because that's the side with all the guns. They're big, they're slow, and they're designed to pour lead on every square inch of the battlefield where your enemy is hiding.
They're big targets.
They are big targets. A shoulder-fired rocket, a man pad,
yeah,
you would think would have an easy time hitting one of these, unless they've got some pretty sophisticated, you know,
supposedly somebody's been bringing down Black Hawks, so if you can bring down a helicopter,
well, yeah, you'd think that they would have to have something to protect these guys against shoulder fired missiles, but they're designed to be used against an enemy that's not well equipped in that regard. The thing is that when these were used in the Vietnam War, I mean, this is not a new high-tech weapon. These were used in the 60s. You basically just circled over the enemy position on the field and just poured lead on them until they all died.
Mm-hmm.
In Vietnam, a lot of the fighting was done over jungles or open terrain.
Right.
In Iraq, most of the fighting is being done in urban areas,
right,
which means you're going to be pouring cannon and minigun fire onto buildings and people. And
exactly, which to me is the whole point. This is not a surgical strike.
Mm-mm.
This is lots of collateral damage.
Yeah. And more so if it involves depleted uranium munitions, mm-hmm, which is very possible.
Right. So my thinking is, is this really for Iraq?
It might be for Iran. You're
mm-hmm
right. We are building those big, we had four big super bases going in around Baghdad.
Three or four. And these are big,
yeah,
permanent bases.
Yeah. Add to that, we got a $600 million embassy, quote unquote, going in near Baghdad.
Yeah.
Sounds more like a fortress, if you ask me.
Sounds to me like we're taking over.
We are not going to be pulling out of there anytime soon. Regardless of what makes it into the news about drawdowns in the number mm-hmm of troops, the fact is we are building four very, very large military bases in Iraq and that huge $600 million embassy. We are going to be there for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, they're calling it the Long War,
mm-hmm,
and you don't call it the Long War if you're planning on pulling out.
Yeah. And, of course, Iraq being next door to Iran makes it a good place from which to launch against Iran. Story in the news today, headline, Iranian bombshell. It appears that the U.S. is preparing evidence for the U.N. Security Council, which they believe will show that Iran has, in fact, been planning to build a nuclear weapon. Now, this evidence was taken from a laptop that the CIA apparently stole from an Iranian scientist containing a brief Farsi language PowerPoint presentation.
What, was the scientist being guarded by the Iranian version of Wacken Hut?
I don't know. I don't know. The story describes the presentation as having catchy graphics.
You know, I think catchy graphics when you're doing a mm-hmm PowerPoint presentation on war
is helpful.
Is the way to go.
Something,
if you can do cartoons,
yeah, that would
that's
be,
the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
With little, you know, bubble conversation bubbles.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully something of higher quality than what Colin Powell was given to work with when he went before the UN.
Here's a nice grainy photograph, and trust us, these you know, in these little blurry objects, they are 18-wheelers full of bad things.
Oh wait, nope, sorry, wait, that's the face on Mars. Here's.
You know, I'm sorry, but I have to visit that question at the time. A, the pictures that Kennedy showed in 1962 were much more clear than what Colin
Very
Powell
sharp.
Showed.
Right.
B, Google Earth has clearer photographs
yeah
than Colin Powell show.
We don't want them to know how good we can, you know.
I think there was a reason why they wanted those photographs blurry.
Well, I didn't think so at the time, but I've changed my mind on that.
I didn't either. I hate to say it, but at the time I thought, okay, they don't want us to know how clear
right
know, the photographs can be. They don't want to give away their ability to see the number of hairs on your head.
Yeah. But in the time since then, the actions of the administration have not given us a lot of confidence that there was good evidence for going to war. Bottom line is we were going in regardless of what those pictures showed.
We were already there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just as I'm sure that we're already in Iran.
Well, good transition there, sweetheart. There is a report that Israeli special forces are operating inside Iran. Yes, we're on that same wavelength there. This is a great show. We're all, you know, just
we're wavelengthed.
That's right. And
if we had some covered casseroles, we'd be even better.
Heating them up right in the middle, that'd be great. That's the only thing would be better, yeah. No, Israeli special forces are right now, according to the AP and Jerusalem Post, working inside Iran to locate the exact sites at which Iran is enriching uranium. This is according to the Sunday Times in London, quoted by the Jerusalem Post, actually. But Iran has said they will resume large-scale uranium enrichment if it is referred to the Security Council. Well, we know that that's going to happen. We know that that's going to happen.
Yes.
We've been threatening with it, and this is what is going to happen. And the so-called bombshell, this Farsi PowerPoint presentation with showing a 2-foot diameter ball, well, that 2-foot diameter, that could only be a nuclear bomb.
Wait a minute. That says made in China on it.
Yeah, you might be right. So things are moving in the direction of an armed conflict, which is what we've been saying all along.
I know.
It just is just sort of more documentation for what we've been talking about. And sadly, a conflict with Iran might involve the use of actual nuclear weapons instead of these so-called depleted uranium weapons.
Yeah, you know, we had a story sometime back on Watcher magazine that the Russians who were saying, we know the date that they're going into Iran. It's March, was it March 24th?
March 20th or 24th? March 20th, I thought.
But yeah. And it was very close to the oil burst, Boris mm-hmm. Yeltsin. Bad enough. The oil Boris and Natasha that's going in. No, it was very close to that date.
I think it was the 24th.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it. I'll look for the story. I'll put a link in the show notes. But we're getting close to that date, and the signs continue to point in that direction. Politicians on both sides are continuing to speak in very belligerent tones. We appear to be getting ready to make our case to the United Nations as to why we should go in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is proof that the two main political parties in the U.S. are on the same team. We are hearing no real dissent from the Democrats. And again, if anything, the woman who appears to be their leading contender for president or the presidential nomination in 08, Hillary Clinton, sounds more hawkish than George W. Bush right now. So we shall see. And of course, we'll keep watching what's going on there. Interesting conspiratorial note. Aviation Week published an interesting article about a secret spacecraft hybrid that apparently was being worked on secretly out at Groom Lake, which, of course, is Area 51, mm-hmm. for the last 15, 16 years.
Yeah, it's sort of a mothership. That I guess just, for whatever reason, decided not to be a mother, and they've supposedly shelved it. It was a two-stage plane-to-rocket sort of thing. So it was actually going to go into space.
Mm-hmm. Called a Black Star.
Yeah.
And apparently it has been scrapped by the military. The government mm-hmm. has decided this is just not going to be functional. They say that it may have been declared operational during the 1990s, but it was apparently too expensive, too noisy, mm-hmm. or what have you. It resembles the XB-70 bomber, according to the Aviation Week mm-hmm. article, and it would basically take off from an airfield like a regular airplane
mm-hmm.
and would make it into orbit, unlike the shuttle, which has to be launched like a Saturn V rocket.
Right. This sounds similar to what Virgin, I think, is planning on doing.
Virgin, oh, okay, Richard, the wealthy Virgin Records guy.
Yeah, isn't he planning on doing some sort of space shuttle
something like that
thing?
From New Mexico, near Roswell. Yeah, apparently this Black Star was supposed to give the United States the element of surprise. It would be so high up, basically, that there was no warning that it would be over a target, and that would give the U.S. Air Force Space Command
mm-hmm.
a real advantage if push came to shove. But, and of course, the military is still denying that this thing was ever in existence. They're still denying that it exists, even though dozens of people have seen this over the last 15 years. But Aviation Week has put all of their evidence together and come out with an interesting article that we'll link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Just something to vindicate all those people that hang out in Nevada on the hills overlooking Area 51.
I've seen something.
I saw it.
I saw something nasty in the woodshed. this is a total left turn because this has nothing to do with Area 51, but it is a really, really disturbing story. If anybody has seen the second Indiana Jones movie, you've seen this cult of Kali. Apparently,
yes.
Kali sacrifices are starting to be, they're doing them again in India.
Yeah.
They've cropped back up.
And now, I think most Westerners looking at something like this would just say, well, this is just, people who are superstitious, they're not educated, and they have these beliefs that date back years and years. We take the view that this is actually a spiritual, supernatural, there is a supernatural component to
mm-hmm.
this. When you look at the the belief systems of many of the ancient cultures around the Hebrews in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very specific things that God told the Hebrews not to do, and many of them involved shedding human blood specifically for the purposes of sacrifice. Now, he wouldn't have told them to do that had their neighbors not been engaged in that, and indeed the evidence from the areas around there, archaeology shows that the followers of Molech and Chemosh and Dagon were, maybe not Dagon, but anyway, the followers of many of the cultures around there were sacrificing mm-hmm. humans and, in many cases, children to these beings. And it was pretty well understood by the Hebrews that those gods were the watchers, the sons of God who had rebelled against Yahweh and been placed over the nations after the Tower of Babel. This Indian cult, yeah, this is a pretty wicked. Kali is pretty ruthless.
Oh, you know, when I saw Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom when it first came out, I thought, you know, good story, but this surely isn't true. This could never have happened.
No.
Well, I was much more naive in those days. Sadly, I know that these things do happen. It's just very disturbing to see them start to happen again. I mean,
yeah.
It's one thing to read about it, you know, in an archaeology magazine mm-hmm. that they discovered signs that this happened 1,000 years ago, but it's another thing to find out that it's going on today.
Yeah, this is still happening in the 21st century and not entirely overseas mm-hmm. because there are indications that we see some of that here in the United States. And, you know, the countries around us. So it's not something that is limited to the remote dark corners of the earth. And we put that story in Watcher Magazine as just a reminder that we, as the Apostle Paul mm-hmm. wrote, wrestle not against flesh and blood.
That is true. One more story that I want to make sure everybody's aware of. We've been speaking of this for some time, and it's what's going on the island of Reunion.
Oh, yeah.
This is going, possibly will make it into the mainstream news now, because even though a third of the people there are now, no, it's a third or a quarter, but it's a lot of people. I think it's 180.
Over a third, yeah.
Yeah. It amazes me how many people mm-hmm. are becoming infected with this chikungunya. It's a mosquito-borne disease mm-hmm. that is crippling and has killed upwards of, I think it's in the 80s, 90 people.
More people
like
than
that.
The avian flu
More
now.
People than the avian flu. This is one on one small island.
Yeah, the population.
Not worldwide.
Yeah, population of the island is only about 770,000.
Well, de Villepin was just there.
The French foreign minister, Dominique de Villepin.
And he was bitten by a mosquito.
Oh.
So now everybody's wondering if that many people are getting sick, then the odds are that almost all the mosquitoes
are infected.
Yeah.
Sure. And this is, well, it's a nasty disease. There's no cure, there's no vaccine, and it is extremely painful. The name comes from the Swahili word meaning that which bends up, because when you get it, you're in such pain from your swollen joints that you walk hunched over.
Mm-hmm.
It's really unpleasant. And it's not just confined to Reunion. It is spread to Mauritius.
And I think there was one case in Madagascar.
And if it gets to Madagascar and starts to spread, they are very concerned because the health infrastructure on Madagascar is very poor compared mm-hmm. to the other islands around, because they are a little more developed, a lot of tourist traffic. And
these islands, their population probably doubles with the amount of tourism that they get at any given time.
Right.
This is their economy, the tourist economy. So they're suffering economically as well. But those tourists that are continuing mm-hmm. to go there, if they're bitten and they go back home.
Right.
And they're bitten by a mosquito in their backyard.
Right.
Then the local mosquito population can get this disease.
And that is the point with Monsieur de Villepin taking it back to France. It just points out that it's only a plane ride away from the so-called developed nations
mm-hmm.
of the West. So if it gets into Europe and begins to spread, we've got problems.
Yeah.
This might be this, ironically, this might be the thing that gets DDT back into production.
Now, isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, you never know. Well, when I was in college, of course, I was taught DDT bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
now I know just DDT was,
it was
good,
right?
But right. Apparently no one was making any money off of it.
Well, so. And you notice that we waited until malaria was pretty much wiped out in North America before DDT was banned.
Good point.
And now there are a couple million children aged 5 and under in sub-Saharan Africa that die of malaria every year because of their mosquitoes. And because it's mostly a problem that affects people of color in Africa, it is a problem that goes pretty much unsolved. Yeah.
You know, and I will predict that here in the Midwest, we'll probably have a really bad mosquito season this year. It was bad enough last year, but I think we've had a very mild winter.
Yep. And so the West Nile scare will be very real.
Yeah, we did have some cases of West Nile in the St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically spread all across the country since it first popped up here in the U.S., suspiciously close to Fort Detrick. So we'll see how what happens here. And boy, this has been a cheerful first anniversary show.
It has indeed, you know. And it, I guess it comes around to we're getting back to the avian flu, which actually was the subject of our very first guest interview.
That's correct.
On PID Radio. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed Dr. Henry Nyman.
Right. And he has continued to keep a watchful eye on things and has been really just about the best source of information as far as tracking the spread of the disease and the reported cases. But again, it is interesting that the word really hit the mainstream media when there were fewer than 70 confirmed deaths worldwide, while at the same time, diseases that were affecting people in Africa primarily, such as the Marburg outbreak in Angola last year and the chikungunya outbreak now, which has killed more people in less time in smaller populations, are pretty much being ignored by the mainstream press. But now, again, as you say, Monsieur Villepin's got the disease, possibly.
Well, he's at least been bitten, so he's worried about it.
Sure.
So it at least got into the mainstream. The AP wrote a story about it. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
Well, you know, it's been a fascinating year. How about if you have a favorite interview, because we've done lots of them now over the last year, if there's a favorite, write to us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Tell us your favorite, and we'll post the top 10 interviews over the last year.
That's a good suggestion.
And we can even replay them, because I don't know if people always go back and listen to all the archives.
Well, that's the thing. If you're a relatively new listener, just the last couple of months, you should note that at the PID Radio website, which is peeringintodarkness.com/radio, there is a link in the top left corner of the page. A little box there that links to our archive page, and I try to keep that up to date. But basically, it has a link to the page and the show notes for every show that we have done. And that goes back the full year. So if you've only heard the last couple of months, you may want to go back and see some of the earlier interviews we've done, some of the foundational interviews.
Yeah, back in the old days when we were in black and white.
Yeah, yeah. And mono.
Yeah.
Oh, we're still in mono.
Monos. Wow. No, not monos. The hands of fate. Ah!
So there are some fascinating interviews there, and we have more to come. Barry Chamish, investigative reporter based in Israel. We spoke with him briefly yesterday, and he's got some very interesting things to say about the state of politics there. He's not very optimistic.
He is not. He's not happy with Israel at all right now. As far as he's concerned, they're all stinky.
And then we've got Tom Horn for next week. And that's going to be an interesting discussion, because we're going to talk about dominionism and how it relates to Christian perceptions of what's going on in the news around us, the coming disclosure event. And that should really be interesting, because when there's nothing gets Christians riled up more, well, besides which version of the Bible to use, than end time prophecy. And how much your faith in God and Jesus translates into patriotism. Some would argue that we have almost a cult of nationality here, that our religion is almost a national religion.
That's creepy.
It is, but there are some corners of Christianity here in the U.S. that would argue that any Christian who, we've even seen it, in fact, the case down in North Carolina where that Baptist preacher wanted to, you know, defellowship or kick out anyone who voted for John Kerry in the last election.
They couldn't come to the next pitch-in supper.
That's right.
Well, that's no good, because those Baptists, we love our pitch-in suppers.
That's right. You don't want to miss those. So no. That's a real threat to hold over someone's head. But the fact is that you can't confuse your loyalty to the country in which you live to the loyalty to God. Not if you take your faith seriously.
Amen. Amen to that.
So, that should be an interesting discussion because Tom has some pretty strong views on that.
Well, if you like discussing that kind of stuff, come join us at the forum.
Mm-hmm.
It's peering in. How about that, honey? A little wavelength there.
I know.
It's peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
And of course, our email is always open, radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Well, you know what? We've wrapped up the end of 1 year and we've started the second year, and who knows how many more weeks, months, or years we're going to be at it. But as long as you're out there listening, we'll be right here.
Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Thanks so much for being there, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day.